Welcome to another eBizQ podcast.
Hello, this is eBizQ's Peter Schoaf, and welcome back to another podcast with Trac Modi. Trac is Vice President and Chief Technology Officer at Caliber Systems, and he's an industry thought leader in IT transformation and modernization technologies such as enterprise architecture, SOA, and cloud computing. Once again, we're going to check in with Trac about cloud computing and the government. So first of all, Trac, thank you so much for joining me today.
Peter, thank you for having me again.
Now, I keep hearing about security issues in terms of the cloud. Are there any ways that cloud can actually help improve security?
Actually, yes. Cloud computing has a lot to offer in terms of security benefits. In fact, Mike Bradshaw, the director of Google's federal division, made some very interesting points before the House Committee on Government Oversight and Reform during a recent hearing on moving federal IT into the cloud. He contended that using clouds to store and manage our data is just like using banks to safeguard our money. Storing your critical data on your computers, either at home or at work, is akin to keeping your cash under your mattress. Still, most agencies today are leery of putting the data in clouds. Actually, can you imagine what people might have said when the first banks came about? Now tell me again, why would I take my money from the safety of my mattress and give it to this place you call a bank? It's not hard to see why clouds can be more secure, since cloud providers tend to employ highly trained security professionals. It's just part of what they do. And it's not just about a more mature security staff. Many of the security benefits of the cloud are actually due to its architectural underpinnings. For example, virtualization enables quick replication of securely configured servers. Broad network access reduces the need to carry data in portable media, such as thumb drives, which in turn reduces the probability of physical theft. And the increased economies of scale with a distributed infrastructure not only provide low-cost disaster recovery, but a higher resistance to denial of service attacks as well. In fact, Peter, if you recall, the U.S. government faced a massive distributed denial of service attack last year on July 4th in 2009. Many federal agency websites were severely impacted, but the public-facing website for the Department of Transportation's CARS program was not affected. Now, is it just a coincidence that this website was being hosted in the cloud? You know, a few days ago, I was reading a year-old Government Accountability Office report on security deficiencies in the federal government. Interestingly, the report confirmed what many of us have long believed, that many of the data losses in federal agencies are not the result of sophisticated, high-tech, carefully orchestrated attacks, but the result of simple things like physical thefts due to inadequate safeguarding of laptops and other portable devices, misconfigured network devices, poor patch management, and the improper segregation of job functions. Honestly, each one of these findings could be relatively easily fixed with a properly managed security program. So based on everything I just said, yes, I do think cloud computing will one day evolve into a more viable and secure alternative to the current suboptimal status quo model of desktop-centric and on-premise computing that we have today.
Well, thanks. That's a great comparison about keeping your data under the mattress, basically.
Absolutely.
Exactly how is the federal government using the cloud right now?
The short answer is lots of different ways. I think one thing you'll immediately notice, though, is that the vast majority of government-based cloud initiatives are private cloud implementations. So, for example, consider DoD's RACE program started by the Defense Information Systems Agency, or DISA, in October of 2008. It's managed completely within the existing DoD data centers and operates only on the DoD's internal network. That's code language for it's a private cloud. As another example, consider NASA's Nebula, which is an infrastructure as a service implementation for scientific data and web-based applications. Although Nebula is a private cloud today, eventually it might become a hybrid cloud so that NASA can collaborate more efficiently with the academic community and the public. So, why are private clouds so popular in the Fed? The answer to this question goes back to our first question. While there are definitely security advantages of a public cloud, the trust just isn't there yet. agencies are just not willing to take on the risk of having their data in a public cloud.
Well, thanks, Tarak. So you brought up private clouds. What are the lessons that the government has learned using private clouds?
Well, there's lots of different lessons that have been learned. And in fact, you probably won't be surprised that most of the lessons learned are in the area of cloud security certification and accreditation. By law, all clouds that host federal information assets have to be certified to operate at a specific security level. This security level describes or decides what can, and more importantly, cannot reside on that cloud. For example, RACE is currently certified to operate at the moderate impact level. Similarly, Nebula is currently authorized to handle only low-impact data. This means that a federal information system that's classified as moderate cannot reside on Nebula. So all this sounds pretty simple, except for the fact that current federal guidance does not clearly address specific controls for cloud computing, like RACE or Nebula. Even if it did, hosting a system in a cloud requires the additional step of delineating who, the customer or the provider, is responsible for each control. And to complicate matters even more, sometimes a control might be a joint responsibility between the provider and the customer, because the provider will still have responsibility for parts of the infrastructure that are under its control. So as an example, effective incident response in a cloud is only possible with clearly defined customer, provider, and joint responsibilities. Unfortunately, the lack of clear guidance means that each cloud is handling all these complexities in its own way. So for RACE, DISA has documented a clear division of responsibilities between what it does and what it expects from its customers. First, all potential customers must agree to meet minimum information security requirements before they are even allowed access to the RACE environment. Second, out of a total of 106 applicable DoD information assurance controls, DISA has designated 62 as the responsibility of the customer, 31 as its own responsibility, and 13 as being non-applicable. Nebula has a similar story. In their current infrastructure as a service offering, the customer is responsible for 47 of the 112 total controls as defined by NIST Special Publication 800-53. Both RACE and Nebula give us some empirical data on how security might be managed in a cloud. But the reality of the situation is that the exact number of controls for which the customer is responsible will always depend on many factors, such as the cloud computing provider itself and the service model.
Now, so these are the lessons learned. How are these actually being translated to the federal government?
Well, there are a few things going on. If you recall, in our last podcast, we talked about a program called FedRAMP in quite a bit of detail. FedRAMP provides a unified government-wide risk management framework that enables centralized security management of cloud computing for federal agencies. It actually goes to the heart of what we just talked about in the last question, which is, how do we best perform security authorization for large, outsourced, and multi-agency systems like the cloud providers and platforms? Also, along the same lines, the General Services Administration, or GSA, has reissued its Blanket Purchase Agreement, or BPA, for procuring infrastructure as a service cloud computing services. As you probably remember, Peter, GSA first issued this RFQ in July of 2009, but canceled it 5 months ago in February. We actually talked about this in our second podcast. As expected, the reissued RFQ has a few differences. So let me highlight a couple of key differences. A major one is, in terms of sheer implications, is that the GSA has raised the security level from low to moderate. So that's going to have significant implications on the certification and accreditation process that clouds have to go through. Another big difference is the integration with FedRAMP. Now, this was obviously not possible the last time around, since FedRAMP wasn't even in existence at that time. But the new RFQ specifies that awardees must obtain a full authorization from FedRAMP before they can even fulfill any orders on the BPA. Each awardee will be given 3 opportunities to submit its documentation for certifications. And If a body fails to receive authorization, it could actually be disqualified from the BPA. So basically, the lessons learned are being translated into better thought out end-to-end strategies with increased collaboration between the agencies. Ultimately, it's all good.
Excellent. Now, let's look forward. And what do you see for the rest of 2010 for the cloud?
Oh, there's definitely going to be a lot of action in the next few months. First of all, President Obama has asked each non-security agency to cut their discretionary budgets by at least 5% for fiscal year 2012. So it's no surprise that any technology that can improve ROI and cut costs will seem very attractive to federal agencies. Can anybody say cloud computing? The Obama administration has also very clearly stated that the 2012 budget should include funding to support data center consolidation plans, which are being finalized this year. And as part of these plans, the agencies have been clearly instructed to evaluate the potential for adopting cloud computing solutions. I definitely expect to see a lot more activity around both the FedRAMP and the GSA cloud computing related RFQ that we just talked about. Another area of activity will be SAJAC, which we talked about in our previous podcast. If you recall, SAJAC's goal is to accelerate the development of cloud-related standards and publish authoritative information on a NIST-hosted SAJAC portal. So Peter, to sum it up, I think federal CIO Vivek Kundra puts it best when he says, cloud computing is not a silver bullet, but it does offer a transformational opportunity to fundamentally reshape the operations of the government and further close the IT gap between the public and private sectors. Like I said, it's going to be an action-packed remainder of the year.
All right. Well, that sounds very exciting, and we'll definitely keep in touch with you, Tarak, and you can keep us informed. This is EbizQ's Peter Schoff speaking with Tarak Modi of Caliber Systems. Thank you so much for another podcast, Tarak.
Thank you, Peter. You're welcome.
This has been an EbizQ podcast.